Welcome to episode 49 of the Talking Soccer Podcast. My last episode before I'm officially a dad. Literally. Next week, I'll be probably hosting a special podcast that's been already recorded with my boss, Rob. You know him better as MLB Model or @TheAlgaholic on Twitter. That'll be next week for sure. We're going to talk about what we did talk about, building a model, how to build a model, best way to use a model, et cetera, in your sports career. It's absolutely a must listen. As much as we bag on my boy, MLB Model, the guy's super sharp, been supporting his family since I've been alive, basically, right? He's old as shit with sports betting. It's a must listen. So if you're into sports betting or you just want to know more about how professionals do it, next week is the way to go. But this week we have an awesome episode of the Talking Soccer Podcast. I appreciate you all tuning in. EPL is on a little bit of a winter break. We do have some games, 4 games total this weekend, and a couple spread out over the next 2 weeks. So we're not going to get into the short slate of games, really, if we don't have time. What I want to do this episode is provide a state of the union for U.S. soccer. But before we get to that, as always, I am your host, Duke. You can find me on Twitter @DukeDFS. All my DFS content, that's daily fantasy sports, over at EliteFantasy.com. All the betting action over at EliteSportsBetting.com. Like I said, the first thing I want to talk about is the state of the union for U.S. soccer. As always, it is Wednesday evening, February 5th, specifically 7:06 p.m. And just yesterday, President Trump gave a state of the union for the nation. And I figured, why not do that this year? Because you know what? For starters, U.S. soccer fans, the state of the union is weak. Weak right now. Greg Berhalter, not the right man for the job. There is zero hype around this U.S. men's national team. And it got me thinking, why is that? Why isn't there any hype? You know, for starters, we haven't been very good lately. By the wonky FIFA rankings, which are literally fairy dust, we're the 22nd best nation in the world. And when you start looking around the country and wonder, why isn't soccer bigger? Yes, it's growing. Yes, we're starting to get more attention from international broadcast systems, international soccer fans, football fans. And 22nd in the world doesn't sound bad, but we're the big bad USA, man. It's first or last. We're Rick and Bobby, baby, when it comes to sports. Also, we haven't been very good of late. Obviously, we missed out on qualification for the last World Cup. Huge blow to not only the psyche, the fandom in the U.S., but also the development of a crucial class that won't have that experience of going to a World Cup. It only comes around every 4 years. And then you fast forward to more recent times since Berhalter's taken over. Hammered by Mexico in September, 3-0. Good God, we lost to freaking Canada 2-0 back in October. There isn't a ton of hype right now. I mean, look, this is my job, and even I'm not watching these games. But there's also the advertising and pricing for tickets issue. These games are being played in front of what? Quarter full stadiums? Tickets are going for 500-600x the price that they should be. The resale market is non-existent. We do not take advantage of home field with this men's national team. And the worst part, the Federation doesn't care. They just want to make money. Look, this is the U.S. Soccer Federation, not Goldman Sachs. Why are we trying to make money? In fact, the goal should be to put so much money behind development and coachings that we're losing money every single year to catch up to the rest of the world. We're the big bad USA. 22nd ain't good enough. But I question the pulse of the nation, because you know what? If you dig a little deeper, and not even that deep, just beyond the surface, the U.S. has a lot going for it at the moment in terms of development. The MLS has never been stronger. We see new franchises coming in at huge dollar amounts, huge dollar amounts. Teams are getting smarter with their recruitment, and crucially for the U.S. men's national team, and this is not a requirement for our domestic league, they are putting in more money into player development than they ever had before. Obviously, that's going to benefit the U.S. men's national team long-term, But whereas previous years, the MLS teams are looking to make a splash, sell jerseys, bring in Beckham, bring in Zlatan, and there's still some of that. You look at Chicharito out in LA. They realize it's far more efficient cost-wise to develop the players that are coming through to be able to play in the first team. So how does that benefit us? How does that benefit the U.S. men's national team? Well, look, just this week, we had one of our very own, Giovanni Reyna, score an absolute peach of a goal for Borussia Dortmund in the Bundesliga, becoming the youngest ever player to score a club that is centuries old. And it's not just him. We have Pulisic, made his big money move to Chelsea in the summer. He had spurts of quality. He's just, what, 21, 23 years old? First teamer in the EPL when he's healthy. Tyler Adams is back fit in the first 11 for RB Leipzig in the Bundesliga. John Brooks, Weston McKinney, regular starters for their Bundesliga sides. Alfredo Morales is starting for the resurgent Dusseldorf in Germany. And perhaps our best player, regardless of age, Sergiño Dest is starting at right back for Ajax. Yes, Ajax, who should have been in the final of the Champions League last year, just made a big decision and chose to play for the U.S. over Holland for his national team career. Josh Sargent's getting plenty of minutes in the Bundesliga. Anthony Robinson was literally at AC Milan completing his medical when that transfer bizarrely fell through. Tim Weah was getting minutes at PSG before moving to Lille. George Bello should emerge for Atlanta United this season. Chris Richards just completed his big move to Bayern Munich last year. Paxton Pomacall looks like a stud, should be heading to Europe soon. Brandon Aaronson just picked up his first cap for the U.S. Look, this player pool is absolutely loaded. And I understand. I fully get. We've been sold this bag of goods before. Everyone who doesn't follow the sport regularly will go back to Freddie Adu. Look, we were all told Freddie Adu was going to save U.S. soccer. Hell, I even put out an article this week over on FanLink about how the savior of U.S. soccer is here in Giovanni Reyna. And that's not fair. Look, no one player is going to make that big of a difference for the success or failure of the national team. But the overall player pool is making strides that we have never seen in our lifetimes. There is so much quality in our player pool that is under 23 years old. All those players I just mentioned, I think, except for maybe John Brooks, are 23 or younger. John Brooks is a center back. He can play until he's 40, for God's sakes. There's a lot to be excited about with this U.S. player pool. So the state of the union for the U.S. men's national team is weak, but the future is bright. I do not think Craig Berhalter is the right man for the job. Who is? I don't know. And because I don't know, we cannot replace Greg Berhalter right now. What I'd love to see out of him is a plan. He says we're on a path. Show me. Show progress from match to match. You know what's tough about a national team? Outside of a World Cup summer or a Gold Cup summer, we have sporadic involvement of the players. You look at our January player pool and the friendlies that we've just played. I mentioned Brandon Aaronson getting a call up to the U.S. men's national team. That is exactly what these games are used for. It's not for the actual first 11 development for the U.S. men's national team. Sure, we may find one or two players from this group, but more often than not, our best are with their clubs playing club matches, not international matches. And rarely do they get together and have enough time to really implement the tactical game plan that Greg Berhalter would like to see. Now look, the key here is, can we translate this talent into qualification for the World Cup? For me, the answer has to be, and it will be, yes. And so with that, I say the state of the union is weak, but it is promising. If it was a stock, I'd be all in, because regardless of who's in charge, there is far too much talent for the U.S. to be left behind. Will we qualify for the next World Cup? Yes. Will I be in Qatar? No, because I'm not getting shot. I'm not getting beheaded. I'm not getting my hand chopped off for God knows what. The damn World Cup shouldn't even be there. But guess what? In 2026, oh, the parties we're going to throw for the Elite Mafia when that World Cup comes back to the States. It's going to be a blast. And by the way, that's not that far away. 6 years from now, Brandon Aaronson is going to be 25. Paxton Pomykal is going to be 25. George Bell is going to be 24, 23. Shit. All these studs I talked about today are going to be entering or in their prime. So look out for the U.S. in 2026. Again, I know we've heard this before, but this is different, guys. This is very different. The development of our youth has been lacking from the ages of 12 until 18. We've lacked that professional environment that the players must get used to, that professional eating regimen, that training schedule, that lack of school, quite frankly, that professionals need to have. In the U.S., we are far too concerned with the academic side of our development in our youth. That sounds ridiculous. And look, I'm about to be a dad. I want my daughter to grow up, have a great education, go to Stanford, be a doctor, a surgeon, who knows what. If we want to be truly a competitive nation on the international soccer or football scene, we can't have doctors. We can have smart kids. We can get them educated. But we need them full-time professional footballers from the time they're 16 on. And that is what we're starting to see with the MLS. Previously, you better hope you have some European ancestries. You can get a dual permit or a dual nationality to go out there and get your opportunity over in Europe. Now that the MLS has developed to the point that it has, we have the opportunity for youth to get quality minutes in professional environments, sign homegrown contracts, and really develop here in the States before moving to Europe or staying in the U.S. and getting quality minutes in those crucial development years. I'm buying U.S. soccer. And look, like I mentioned, we do have a break this week and next week for the EPL. Every team in the Premier League will play exactly once over the next 2 weeks. We have four games this weekend, but we also just had some FA Cup action wrap up. And we're going to talk about that before we close out the show here. In and out this week, baby on the way. Spurs, today, Wednesday, won an exciting 3-2 thriller against Southampton. Actually, a game that saw Spurs take the lead, give up the lead, and then grab it back at the death to send them through to the next round. Huge result for Jose and the lads there, obviously still without Harry Kane. But this week also featured a little bit of drama, right? We had Liverpool playing the kids against Shrewsbury. They won the game 1-0 on Tuesday. But let's talk about this game for a second, because this is really interesting. For one, number one, the kids, the side wasn't that young. The average age was 24 for Liverpool's kids team. By the way, Man United's average age for the first team is 23. So let's set the record straight. That kids team for Liverpool, 24. Our first team for Man United, 23. It's not a spin zone. Those are facts, baby. Get into it. Second of all, who cares? Who cares that they played a second side? It's the FA Cup. It's a big deal. Nah, man. It used to be a big deal. And look, would I care if United won the FA Cup? Absolutely. But we have nothing else to play for besides what? The Europa League trophy? Something like that? We're certainly not in the title race. Top four looks gone. But Liverpool have bigger goals on the horizon. Their first players, who rarely are rotated, have just gone through the brutal holiday schedule. We have Champions League coming back up. In league play, they can close it out early. I'm sure they'd like to do that so they can focus on Champions League down the road. Klopp not being there, not the best look. But we ask these players and coaches to play so many games. Plus, it's freaking Shrewsbury, dude. Like, what are we talking about? What are we talking about? It's not Juve. If you can't beat him with the second team, perhaps you shouldn't be playing another game regardless. And the last thing I'll say about this before we move on, because I read a poignant story from the Shrewsbury manager who's saying, you know, it's a real shame that Liverpool are taking this route. It's a real big financial hit for Shrewsbury that Liverpool aren't playing their first teamers. Dude, respectfully, fuck off. This is a replay. This is a bonus. You shouldn't even have any revenue coming your way from this game, let alone the £150,000 or whatever it is you're going to make. Could they have made more if they played the first teamers? Sure. Could they have made less? 100,000%, dude. This is a replay. If Liverpool finishes their chances in the first match or, you know, not squander a 2-0 lead, this game never happens. It's a bonus. I get what you're saying, my man, but peep, peep down. Peep, peep. And for those who don't know what I'm talking about, in the FA Cup, through round five, I believe, if you end up tied at the end of regulation in your first match, you play the match again a week later at the opposition's home field. So the first game was at Shrewsbury, Liverpool up 2-0. I turned the game off. We had a bet on Liverpool in that game. I find out later, about an hour later, Liverpool conceded two goals in the last 30 minutes of the game, ended up tied 2-2. So now the match goes to a replay at Anfield. At that point, Jurgen Klopp said, probably in frustration with how his team just performed, we're going to play the kids. I'm not going. Good luck. And because of that result, they had to play again. So look, now that they go back to Anfield, I believe the split is the home and away split the revenues towards 80%, so 40 and 40. Then the FA gets 10% of the revenue generated from that game. So look, that's what I'm saying. Could Shrewsbury have made more if Liverpool played their first team? Maybe. Who's to say that stadium's packed if you have Mane and Salah running around playing Shrewsbury, who, by the way, didn't play in the first match either. So peep, peep, quiet down. How about the rest of the games? Next week, we're not going to talk about the results. Let's talk about who we have playing and who I think can move forward. Chelsea and Liverpool match up in a game that I think will be awesome because, again, Chelsea are in a top four race. Liverpool might have the league wrapped up by the time this game comes back around. Liverpool likely to win that game. I choose them to advance regardless of who they line up. Not a huge fan of Chelsea right now. Frank Lampard, not a happy man. The big matchup of the week is certainly going to be Derby County versus Man United. Why? Two teams that aren't necessarily relevant. Wayne Rooney, now the captain and future manager, I believe, like a player manager of Derby County, who was just managed by Frank Lampard last year. Playing against his old club, Wayne Rooney for Derby County, Man United. Should be an awesome matchup there. Even with all the struggles, Ighalo scores two goals, pushes Man United through. Let's go! Leicester against Birmingham City. Leicester getting their feet underneath them again. Should have a win there. Portsmouth versus Arsenal. Got to be Arsenal, right? I believe it's at... I think Arsenal's hosting that game. Arsenal got to have the win there. Reading versus Sheffield. Interesting matchup. Should be low scoring. Sheffield to have winning that matchup. Sheffield Wednesday versus Man City. Should be Man City by several goals. Tottenham Norwich. Interesting matchup here. Again, Jose is squeaking out results by the skin of his teeth. And we'll talk about a result from the EPL this past weekend when we do that recap. Tottenham has to win this match. But I'm thinking it's going to be quite a battle. Quite a battle for Jose and the boys. In the end, Tottenham wins there. West Brom versus Newcastle. I actually have West Brom winning this game. Newcastle, for as well as you're doing in the Prem, do tend to rotate their side a touch for these FA Cup matchups, especially as we get later in the season. Depending upon how their league play is going, could see some rotation there. But even first 11 versus first 11, I like West Brom in that matchup. So a lot of favorites, Liverpool, Man United, Leicester, Arsenal, Sheffield, United, Man City, Tottenham, and then West Brom, our one dog, moving through to the final eight, I believe, in the FA Cup. And I did mention that we had a crazy weekend in the EPL last week. Let's do a recap of that. Tonight's podcast is sponsored by Crown Royal. I ran out of other bourbon, and this is what we're going with. Okay, EPL action. I called for a shootout. And by God, did West Ham and Brighton certainly give us that. It was a 3-3 wrecking ball of a game. I'd say promising signs for West Ham, but look at this. Look at the game again. Once again, they're throwing away points. They were up 3-1, and the only goal they conceded to that point was just a weird goal where Fabianski comes out and tries to punch across, hits it right off Ogbonna's head, bounces right in the goal. A bit comical if you're not a West Ham fan, but again, perhaps sign of things to come. As West Ham trip over their own feet, give up two late goals, including a goal to our boy Glenn Murray, end up tying 3-3. Weird matchup there, probably a fair result, but man, when you're up 3-1 at home and you concede those two late goals, tough to swallow there. League leaders, league champions, world champions, Liverpool spanked Southampton 4-0, but that scoreline's a bit misleading if you watch the game, considering how the game actually played out. There were large spells, especially in the second half, where I should say into the first half, into the start of the second half, Southampton really had a lot of possession and chances, but in the end, quality wasn't there to finish them, and the quality was just too high in the attacking third for the champs. 0-0 at halftime, 4-0 finish is Liverpool to the max. Everton also picked up a 90th minute winner to take all 3 points away to Watford. And perhaps this is the universe kind of writing itself, right? Because we remember back not too long ago, we had the bet on it. Everton up 2-0 in the 93rd minute, concede a goal in the 94th and a goal in the 95th to Newcastle. There's 2 points squandered, end up with a draw. Now we get a goal in the 90 plus minute, get our 2 points back on what should have been a draw against Watford. The universe is balanced out. Don't look now. But where's Everton in the table after that win? They've jumped Arsenal. They're sitting in ninth in the top half where everyone had them in the preseason. Great call there to change the manager. Bournemouth beat Aston Villa 2-1, but will be without Jefferson Lerma as he got a red card in this game. Once again, throw the dart on Bournemouth and what their result's going to be. But I will say, Jefferson Lerma is a huge piece of this team in the way that they play, especially when they're having success. So do not discount him being out. That is a big loss for them and their next matchup. Big matchup of the weekend, Leicester versus Chelsea, end up in a 2-2 draw. Probably a fair result in that game. Goals obviously both ways. Chelsea came out on fire. Leicester battled back. I think a point there for each team is perfectly fine. Leicester keep their third. Chelsea keep their fourth. Bit of a stumble by Chelsea, I would say, to end up with a draw there, but fine result. Sheffield continue to plod along, picked up all 3 points away to Crystal Palace. Huge result for them. And look, Vegas could not make this total low enough. I think it went off at the total being 2 with some slight juice on the under, which is the literal lowest you'll see for a 90-minute game in professional football. But I didn't hate the under in that game. It ends up 1-0 for Sheffield United. Congrats to them on all 3 points, obviously, there. And next, Newcastle-Norwich, snooze fest, 0-0. And then United drew Wolves, 0-0. So not a bad result for either of those four teams, quite honestly. For Man United, top four looks gone, so stop dreaming, Red Devils. It's Europa League or bust for Champions League. For Wolves, fine result. Newcastle out of the relegation zone. Norwich on only 18 points, sitting in 20th place, last in the table. Needed 3 points there. Tough result for them. Then we move on to Sunday. Burnley and Arsenal featured 25 shots. Of those 25, only 4 hit the target. We always talk about quality of the attacking third. Arsenal have the quality, but for whatever reason, couldn't put it together. Sean Dyche, great point there with a 0-0 draw. Another snooze face. But the biggest game of the weekend had to be Tottenham versus City on Sunday. It's always fun when Jose and Pep match up together, the two masterminds in world football. How would Jose set up the team? Would he bunker? Would he park the bus? Would he try to play? How's Pep going to do it? Is he going to go 2 defenders and 8 midfielders and 1 forward? You know, how's he going to play? Well, the answer here is simple. Man City dominated the entire game. Even when they went down to 10 versus 11 after Zinchenko got his red card in the 60th minute on the dumbest professional foul, which I blame Pep for because he tells his players to do this. We're going to keep possession. We're going to play. We're going to attack. We're going to attack. We're going to have tons of numbers in the. But if you lose the ball, foul. Tactically foul the players. I blame Pep. This is Zinchenko being a total idiot, taking a second yellow card in a bad spot when Man City were on the front foot. But even after he went out, City still had the lion's share of possession and chances. But sure enough, that snake, that weasel, Jose Mourinho, had another trick up his sleeve. City were down to 10 men, and the smash and grab was complete. New boy Steven Bergwijn took a cross beautifully off his chest. I think Lucas Moura chipped it back in. And before it even hit the ground, took a full volley in the blink of an eye, put Spurs up 1-0. Dream debut for the new boy. And look, he was largely invisible for most of the game, but they were defending all the time. You don't buy Steven Bergwijn to defend. That's what you buy him for, is to grab these moments of brilliance. And quite frankly, I don't think he's a big goal scorer either. He's going to be more of a setup man and will complement Son on those wings once Harry Kane comes back. Unbelievable goal by him. Son adds a goal just 8 minutes later, and it was game done. 3 points for Spurs, vaulting them in to fifth in the table, just 4 behind Chelsea, who apparently no one wants to catch in the league. And that's kind of how we'll finish out the podcast here tonight. Let's go through the table as it stands today through 25 weeks. Liverpool in first place, 73 points. Good God, 22 points ahead of second place Man City, who have opened up a 2-point lead on Leicester, who sit in third. Chelsea still in fourth at 41 points, eight behind Leicester, but four ahead of Tottenham, who are now in fifth place. Sheffield, God bless Sheffield, 36 points in sixth place. Man United down to seventh with 35. Wolves in eighth with 35. Everton now up to ninth with 33 points. Arsenal in 10th, 31. Burnley, 11th. Newcastle, 12th. Southampton, 13th, all on 31 points as well. Crystal Palace sitting 14th, 30 points. And here's where we get testy. 15th, 16th, 17th, and 18th, all separated by 2 points. 18th, obviously, being the relegation zone. Brighton on 26th, Bournemouth on 26th, Villa on 25th, and West Ham on 24th. Or excuse me, in 18th. Bournemouth in 16th, Aston Villa in 17th, West Ham in 18th, Brighton, Bournemouth on 26 points, Villa on 25, West Ham on 24 points, just one ahead of Watford, who's in 19th place and 23. Down deep, Norwich, 20th place on 18th points. So we have see a couple teams there who had really decent surges earlier in 2020, late 2019, and West Ham and Watford, those new manager bumps that have since worn off, firmly in the relegation now and 18th and 19th place. Villa just outside with 25th. I still think they're in grave danger of going down. Bournemouth, now out of the relegation zone. Good news for Eddie Howe, but I think they're sticking with him regardless. And Brighton sitting on 26 points, just two out of the relegation zone. We'll need to get points from home matches, especially if they are to stay up for the rest of the season. A lot to play for still, considering the first place is now done and dusted. Liverpool, I think, can actually end the championship run and confirm the trophy earlier than any other team in Premier League history if they went out as they have been here for the next five or six games. As for third, fourth, fifth, sixth place, Chelsea right now have a grip on it, but slipping desperately. It's who's going to catch them. United are faulting. Sheffield would be an absolute dream story, but Europa League spot seems more realistic. Wolves, I don't think, have the talent or the drive to get up into the top four. It's really between Chelsea and Tottenham, which will be an interesting race for our preseason future of top team in London, of which we have Tottenham. I don't like Jose Mourinho, but he can eke out results like he did against Man City this past weekend. And look, that's going to do it for this week's Talking Soccer podcast. As always, I really appreciate you guys tuning in. If you haven't yet, make sure you subscribe to the channel. Leave us a review. 5 stars. We'll get you read out on the next podcast, which for me, as far as the live podcast goes, will be February 19th. Make sure you come back next week, February 12th. That's a Wednesday, for my interview with the Alcoholic. Awesome conversation about modeling, pro sports betting. And then, special guest as we kick off the MLS season at the end of February. I can't announce him yet, but he's confirmed he's coming on. It's a big dog in the MLS community. Looking forward to that, and looking forward to seeing all you guys on Twitter. Adios.